Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back with you again today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as you utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work life. Christmas is only 2 days away, and as such, we are honored today to have with us two very, very special guests. Their names are Terry Brisbane and Rusty Roof. Terry has been the lead pastor of Cornerstone SF for the past 3 decades, helping to grow the church into a multi-generational congregation with over, get this, listeners, 1,000 attendees. And he holds a Doctor of Ministry degree from the King's University. Rusty is a well-known technology executive, startup advisor, and thought leader in the Bay Area. He has served on numerous boards of director, including as a founding board director of Glassdoor. And listeners, take a listen to this, please. He was the national coordinating co-chair for technology during Barack Obama's successful 2012 re-election campaign. As you could tell, they are great apart. They are even better together because they are the co-authors of the timely book, The Faith Code, a future-proof framework for a life of meaning and impact. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Terry and Rusty.
Good
Hey,
morning.
great morning, Greg.
Thank you so very, very much. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you are each speaking this morning. Terry, let's start with you, please.
Right now, I am in San Francisco, California, and
Oh.
sharing from my home office with you in this beautiful city that God has made and named after St. Francis.
Oh, beautiful. Rusty, how about you?
And I'm just about 15 miles south of Terry in Burlingame, California, just a suburb of San Francisco, and on a beautiful, beautiful morning.
You've just made this host and our listeners very, very jealous. Beautiful parts of the world, that's for sure. Terry, Rusty, sadly, we've only got 30 minutes. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool, certainly. First, let's start with this, please. How do we find and do our daily work with joy and deep satisfaction? Something that seems to be missing today, joy, deep satisfaction. Help us out, Terry and Rusty, please.
Rusty, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I'll jump in. Well, Greg, I think the first aspect of that is we have to look at work as a gift. So many people look at work as, a burden or something that they have to toil for. And there are those that will go back and, speak about how, work was the curse, right? That Adam, they messed it up and now we have to go to work. But the truth of the matter is that they were working prior. Right? They were working prior to the fall, and that God had given them a garden to take care of. And so our work is a gift. And if you don't think it's a gift, ask somebody who can't work, right? Talk to somebody who's either out of work, lost a job, or have the inability physically or mentally to work. And then try to say to somebody else, it's not a gift. It is a gift. So we start with that attitude. We start there, and then we move into the fact of, you know, what is God given us for our talents, the experiences that we've been given, what he wants us to do with those talents, and the joy that we can get from committing ourselves and our work to be as excellent as we can for him. There is true joy to be found.
Oh, that's so awesome. Terry, your thoughts, please.
My thoughts lead me back to the beginning, a beginning of time as we know it, and ultimately back to our Creator God. When we really think about it, and Rusty alluded to this, you go back to Genesis and you see that God created. That is an action of work. And then he took a moment, however we would define it in our context of time, to reflect on the goodness of what he had done. And work is designed to bring deep satisfaction and, I'm going to use your word, Greg, joy. What an appropriate word heading into this season. In fact, we devoted an entire chapter to joy. We call it the Irresistible Attitude. It's the 11th chapter in our the Faith Go book. But I believe that if we can connect what we're doing work-wise to honoring God, like there, I believe there is a unique joy to be found in it that is specifically designed for us. And that deep satisfaction that comes is intrinsically placed into every human being. It is part of the Imago Dei, the God-designed capacity within all of us to take satisfaction in what we do. We weren't created just to sit back and recline. In fact, if anything, that will create decay and diminishment. Ouch. It's when we engage, but in healthy ways, Greg, not in ways that are destructive and demeaning, and that recreation begins to occur inside of our soul, spirit. It's connected to how we were made. It's how we're hardwired. It's how we reflect God's reality. And so when we connect into that, there is a joy to be found. There is. And then if I can just add one small piece, joy is also, I think, something that we cultivate by the way in which we do what we've been given to do, if I can say it that way, right? Wow. We make a decision to engage it in a way that honors God. It brings joy into our heart, and joy creates more joy. Think about even, you know, 2 days away from Christmas, think about the Christmas story. How much joy is a part of it? Heaven breaks out in joy, singing, song, joy.
Oh, that is so beautiful, certainly. Now, it's very interesting you mentioned about sitting back, because I want to talk about ambition. There are some people who think ambition is dangerous. As an entrepreneur, innovator, how do we keep our ambition under control while still giving our companies and ideas the push, the drive, the life they need to thrive? Talk to us about this balance, please.
I think it lives... that answer lives in where our identity is. Okay. So I don't think there's anything wrong with ambition. Ambition means to want to progress and to reach further and whatever your goals and your desires are. However, if that defines you, if that becomes your identity is if I don't move forward, then therefore there's something wrong with me. Or if I don't move forward, then I'm failing all the time. Or if I don't move forward, I'm letting other people or myself down. Then that becomes an issue. That becomes it. And that's where I believe so many people in my life that I've seen, entrepreneurs who've, you know, had, what's the term, blind ambition, right? I mean, they just blindly go forward and don't even think about the consequences of their ambition and how it might hurt others or leave others behind. And what you find is when you peel it back, they're trying to prove something, right? They're trying to prove something to themselves or to others, and it's become too much a part of their identity. So I think we have to check ourselves. You know, we constantly have to check ourselves and say, why is it You know, what is it inside of me? That's what we try to do in the faith code. We give us this idea of, you know, there is a crucible of identity. I mean, there's these external influences that are driving us and pulling us, right? They're constantly telling us this is what we should do. But there's these internal parts of our identity as well, our dreams and our aspirations and our ambition, if you will. But the crucible between those two is our identity, that we have to push us and test ourselves and say, why are we and who are we and what are we trying to and why? And so that's where I think for me that answer lies.
Oh, that is so wonderful, certainly. Now, it's very interesting because there's an analogy that's been drawn. They talk about Jesus disrupting the world and its systems 2,000 years ago, turning them on their head, in the same way technology does today. Can we draw an analogy on this? Terry, Rusty, help us out, please.
Rusty, you go for that one again. I think that's
helpful. Yeah. I think Jesus was a disruptor. How could he not have been a disruptor, right? He came in and he said, you know, hey, all the rules, all the regulations, all the laws, you know, I'm going to put them in a new context for you. And that in itself, you know, was probably the greatest disruption that anyone had seen in time. For him to redefine, you know, generations and generations and generations of laws that people had followed. So I think he was a clearly a disruptor. However, let me say this, you know, there are those who disrupt and innovate to tear down and destroy. That was not Jesus. That's the Jesus I understand. It was not to destroy and tear down, but to build up, to build on, right? To take it to the next level and to bring us closer, you know, in the gap between the human experience and our ability to know God. I don't know, Terry, jump in there.
I mean, was that not what Jesus taught us? That the thief comes but to rob, steal, kill, and destroy. But the Son of Man has come that you might have life and have it more abundantly, overflowing now and forever. This is the gift. It is a disruption, but it's a holy disruption, just like the Christmas event is a disruption to the status quo, but it is also the fulfillment of a plan that God has had for all of us to recover a lost humanity. And that's the best. Rusty, I thought, touched on it. That's why I was confident he would share something that would be meaningful in that answer, because Jesus disrupts, but it's not to destroy. Jesus disrupts to bring life. And this is the holy assignment. It doesn't mean there won't be some destruction. There won't be some collateral, I suppose, if you look at it from the perspective of those who were in power, for example, the religious leaders at the time, certainly those who may have been taking advantage of a system that was designed to do damage, but Jesus the revolutionary was a revolutionist of the soul and the spirit, not interested. He said, "This kingdoms of this world, they'll come and go." He wasn't interested. You know, they tried to get him to intervene. In fact, people would try to get Jesus to intervene all the time. I think most of us are aware of that, right? You know, will you help me with my inheritance? My brother is cheating me. You know, who should we pay taxes to? Should we rise up and resist? And Jesus said, well, you know, man, to the one who was asking him to intervene on the inheritance issue, Jesus said, man, who's made me an arbitrator with you? And then as far as the coin was concerned and Roman authority, Jesus said, show me the coin. You know, whose image is on this coin? They said, Caesar's. They said, get render to Caesar what is Caesar's. The whole point being that those issues, though not unimportant, were secondary by far to the larger issue. The disruption that Jesus was bringing was going to change the world forever. Rome is in you know, it's long past its glory, but the kingdom of Jesus has no end. It's continuing on right now. We are all in a discussion because of that holy disruption. And it began in terms of the human invasion with Jesus and his coming.
Absolutely amazing, certainly. Now, I know your great book, The Faith Code, talks about some mindsets of love. I think there are five of them. Did you want to share about one or two of these mindsets of love, please?
Well, I mean, for me, I know this is an underestimated one, and I'm just going to approach it from a combination standpoint, because we also talk about the three loves as well. And I think first establishing the sense of wholeness around those loves then allows us to do what you just asked, and Rusty can jump in on those. But I want to establish the fact that we need to come to a place where we have a deep love for God that is real and vibrant and alive, and make the case that all of our love and expression of love flows from that relationship. We talk about that a lot. It is a cornerstone of the book. It is a foundational principle. These teachings and sayings of mine, Jesus's words that invite us into a loving relationship with God, is the beginning point. Then we begin to love others out of that context, always imperfectly. I think we understand that. None of us get this right. And then we add a third dimension. Foundationally, we say, but that also is going to involve loving ourselves well. And I don't mean in a selfish way, but rather a selfless way, or an increasingly selfless way. Or how about this? A Christ-like way that represents a sacrificial component that really does speak less about who we are as a first priority, and thinking about our love for God and our love for others. I'll just, again, connect it. One last point here. I really can't learn to love myself properly until I have that relationship with God. And I really can't love others properly until I'm loving myself in a healthy way. So those are all connected. And if we break the beginning principle, the others will falter. This is huge. So Rusty, pivot off of that perhaps, and maybe you can sure. answer Greg's question in a different way.
Yeah, one of the things we try to do in the Faith Code is we want to give you things that you can easily remember. So we use acronyms a lot, especially in the part that I write. And so as you're asking about those five characteristics, what we did was we packaged those into the word love cares, C-A-R-E-S, cares. So what does cares mean, those five characteristics? Well, first of all, we believe love is creative. Right, love ideates. It does things and creates things that didn't exist before. You know, so when you love something or you love someone, you know, you will find that you want to be creative. Think about those that we love in our life, that we come up with, you know, unique gifts or special times. You know, so love is creative. Secondly, love is abundant. Right, love is not limited. Yeah, the resources of the world are limited, but our power to come up with new ways of using those resources, and I'm going to use a word that's very topical right now, is regenerative, like generative AI, right? But, you know, in this case, love is regenerative, mm-hmm. and it's abundant. Third in the word cares is love takes and encourages responsibility, right? When we love something, we're responsible for it. We hold ourselves accountable to make sure, right, that that is true. Let's just say it this way. The buck stops here when it comes to love. Fourthly, love empowers. Love is not top down, do what I say, but bottom up. So what do you think, right? You know, we turn the table on love. When we love someone, we don't tell them what to do. We want to find out what they want so that we can help them do what they need to do. And then finally, and lastly, love stewards. And I love this because it ultimately acknowledges that everything belongs to God and everything should be used to his purposes. And that abundance is not a lot of something, but, you know, more than enough. And that means that we have to steward what we've been given. right? And so when we have this ability and this and these experiences to just pour out God's love through us to others, it means that we are stewarding that, and we must steward that in the right way. And so that's why those are the five characteristics, and that's why we use that term, love cares. It truly, truly cares when you get down underneath it.
Oh, how beautiful that is, certainly. Now, as co-authors of this great book, The Faith Code, but also as very good friends, invariably over the decades you've known each other, you may have had a difference or two, maybe political, maybe otherwise. In light of these divided times where there is so much relational tension and even separation, how have both of you used this great faith code to contend for peace and remain so close?
I can jump in. One of the keys for us has been keeping Christ at the center. Because that's our great commonality. Now, I know there are some people who would say, yes, but then, you know, how we live that out in terms of our political or social life, this is where we might have to part ways. And there is obviously some disagreements, because, you know, as Christians, we should connect our political values to our faith values. I don't believe they should be separated. They need to be integrated. We need to walk with a clear conscience before God. But there are times where we can agree to disagree around maybe some gray areas. And each one of us will have to search our own heart as to what our non-negotiables are. So in Rusty's, in my case, that we made Christ preeminent in our lives. And we agreed that there might be times where we would have to agree to disagree. And I had to be very delicate in that process because, you know, I was Rusty's pastor and his friend as well. And it was very important that even if I disagreed with something, I tried to support him to be the best representation of light for the kingdom of Jesus as he could possibly be. And knowing that God had taken him into circles and spheres of influence that could and did deserve the light of Jesus. And this was clearly on his heart. So that at that point, my responsibility became to be, okay, Rusty, let's try to stay as biblically centered, as Christ-centered as we possibly can, and may God use you as a light in Caesar's household. So this is, in other words, there's an opportunity, if I could say to our listeners, Greg, is a lot of it as where we choose to focus. If we choose to focus on our dividing places, then we end up losing, I believe, in the long haul. If we can find a way to create a degree of unity on the things that are most important and then work our way out of that in redeeming ways and focus on the things that we can do that would make a difference for God's goodness and kingdom, then it becomes an opportunity. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just saying that's what Rusty and I chose to do. And it has produced this fruit right now. That we're all sharing together, The Faith Code, because it's a unique book in regards to how it connects. My positions tend to be very, you know, biblical, Christ-centered positions, and Rusty is really focused on how that plays itself out in work and society.
Wow. Yeah, I'll add to this, Greg, and thank you for that, Terry. Thank you for that, Terry. One of the things that has been such a blessing in our relationship, and I will call it the theory of displacement, and you know what displacement is, when you take a vessel and you fill it with liquid and you put in big rocks or small rocks and you fill it up, that water, that liquid will go away, right? Because it gets displaced. And I think that in our relationship, and I would encourage other people to have others in their lives to help them with, you know, what Terry has done is he's been really great at making sure that in my life, I've got the right big rocks in the vessel to displace all of the other things that are so easy in the world to actually become important and unfortunately too important, right? So one of the things we do in the faith code, and the reason I'm saying this is because, you know, some of the areas that I am involved with could become more important to me than staying grounded and fixed on the right things, which are the things of God, right? And but you need others to help you to not get out of whack when it comes that way. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, our relationship has been able to do for me. And hopefully, you know, I've been able to do some of that for Terry over the years. But I would say this is that, you know, we do this in the faith code that we should test ourselves all the time. And, you know, there's two things you can do that are amazing. If you're questioning what's really important in your life and what, and do you have your priorities right? Take your calendar and take your financial statement and go through your calendar and see how you spend your time. Go through your credit cards and see, where am I spending my money or my checkbook, and where am I spending my resources? And in a very short order of time, if you're honest with yourself, you will see, you know, where you've placed your priorities. Oh. And so I think we have to have people who check our, who help us when we disagree or we see things differently from a different perspective. That's a really healthy relationship to have accountability. And then we also have to be checking ourselves all the time to see, you know, how are we spending our time, how are we spending our resources, and where do our priorities really lie?
This is so timely with Christmas just 2 days away. Sadly, I know some of our listeners have kind of separated from relatives or friends due to some differences. You two are a role model relationship for our listeners and I to follow, certainly. So hopefully for Christmas, we can have some people be reunited. And you've also given us some great fodder as we enter into 2024 in the next few days as well. Sadly, we've only got 4 minutes. We could literally speak all day about this amazing book and you too as well. But a couple of questions before we depart. Is there one greatest principle we can obey as human beings to give our lives substance and meaning? What do you think? Is there one greatest principle? Terry, Rusty, what do you think?
Well, we talk about that in the book, but we quote the great one. We quote the master. We quote our savior, who said that the greatest commandment of all is to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength, and then your neighbor as yourself. That, to me, is the one great principle that will carry us through this life, and if we are willing to walk with Jesus into the next. Because loving God is at the center, and all good things flow from that place, even when life is hard. And, you know, Christmas is sometimes a time where, you know, it can, for some, it can feel lonely.
Sure.
And there's memories flow in, and some of them create a wistfulness and a melancholy, and a pain is revisited. And yet even there, the Lord is present in the tenderness of Christ, and waiting to warm our heart and soul. That's not just good words. That's a true invitation to find our life in him and to find our safety in his love. I'll leave you with this. One of the things I love to tell our people is that the safest place in all the world is the center of his will.
Oh, that is amazing. No doubt about that. Most important question we've saved for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase the Faith Code? How can they best follow both of you, please?
Well, the Faith Code is available any place that you buy your books, particularly online. Most large bookstores and independent bookstores now have us on the shelf. If they don't have you on the shelf, all you have to do is ask for it. Just ask for a copy of the Faith Code, and they will get that for you. And then we have a website that you could go to learn more about us and to learn what we're doing with the book. And that is thefaithcode.com. So very easy. Thefaithcode.com.
And I could be found, Brother Greg, anytime that someone wants to check us out. My church, and I've been sharing these past few weeks, an Advent series as well. CornerstoneSF.com on YouTube is, I mean, the Cornerstone SF channel is easy to find. So that's where we're at as well.
Listeners, we've got no excuse. Terry and Rusty, very accessible. This book is all over the place. Yes, Christmas is 2 days away, but still plenty of time. Purchase this book. Get copy for yourself. Makes a great gift. Share the good. We've got two great Franciscans with us today, Terry and Rusty. They could have held on to the good. No, what did they do? They wrote this book. They shared the good. They came on, thank God, for Monday. Shared the good. Now it's your turn. And this is great, great fodder for the new year as well. So if it's a little too late for Christmas, give it to someone for New Year's. Give it to a bunch of people for New Year's. It'll change their life. It'll change your life as well. Pastor Terry Brisbane, Rusty Roof, we cannot thank you enough for coming on Thank God for Monday today. Yes, we've been enlightened much more. We've been inspired. I am even more excited now about Christmas and about 2024 as a result of this amazing interview. And we wish you continued joy, success, happiness, contribution for a beautiful, beautiful Christmas and 2024 beyond, certainly. And listeners, naturally, we want to share with you our best wishes, our best joys for you. And we thank you for listening through 2023 and beyond into 2024. And if you don't mind, Pastor Terry, would you be so kind to close with a Christmas prayer for our listeners, please?
Oh, yes. My Lord, I thank you for your goodness and your grace and your love for us. I ask that on these special days that we're entering into, as we celebrate your coming and all that it means, that you would give us the gift of a soft heart. I do. Who can be afraid of a God who comes to us as a baby? Lord, thank you that there is no place that is too dirty, too broken, that your joy in life cannot come. Bring your light, bring your love, bring your blessing to all who are listening. This Christmas blessing, I speak in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Rusty, Terry, again, many, many thanks. Listeners, sorry to say we're out of time. Our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Rusty and Terry do, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Thank God. Have a very blessed Christmas, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.